Okay, welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker tonight is a compulsive overeater and a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. So help me welcome Sharon B., a compulsive overeater from Michigan. Hi, Sharon.
Hey, family. Hi, my name is Sharon, very, very grateful, recovered, not cured, compulsive eater from Michigan. So glad to be here. And my abstinence date is November 23rd, 2020, and currently maintaining at the moment a 90-pound weight loss, which I'm so grateful for. But even better than that is the level of serenity and neutrality. I brought some pictures to share. I haven't done this before, so I hope you'll bear with me. I hope I'm doing this right. So this first picture is me. This is about 2009. I couldn't tell you 100% when it is because I didn't like pictures taken back then. I hated myself. I hated to be seen. I didn't want to be seen. And the only reason this one got taken is because I was standing next to a sponsee in another program and I loved her, so I would allow the picture for that. This is me in 2019, and this is with my husband. And this was when I was at a point where I couldn't get under 200 pounds to save my life. I was already in an OA program, but didn't have a food plan at that time. Didn't really know what my abstinence was, so I was a little bit lost, but kept coming back. So I hope y'all do too. This is in 2020, and my body constantly changed. I don't know what life is. It's so weird to have one size in the closet and not have a backup. My husband and I live in a motorhome, and we don't have room for boxes and boxes of different sizes of clothes. It's so nice not to have to switch back and forth. At this point, I was at about an 18, 20. And this is after I got a food plan, got abstinent. And this is a year after my abstinence started. I didn't think it was possible when my dietitian gave me a goal weight of 155, 160. I said, I don't know what it's like to be under 200, but she said it's possible. At this point, I was at goal weight. And this is me in front of our motorhome. And I'm amazed that still a year later, it's still happening. And then this was my 60th birthday. And being able to go out and celebrate with my husband and do things without the burden of everything that came with the excess weight is such an incredible gift. This is another picture of us going out to another event. And this is yesterday. And and I'm so grateful. I still fit in those jeans from 2021, which is a miracle for me. You know, I don't know what that's like. I know what it's like to lose weight. I could lose weight over and over and over again. I got to a certain point where I couldn't get past it, get down under the 200. But earlier in my life, I was an expert at losing weight. It was what happened after I lost weight, when I bounced back up, that it never happened, that this, what you're seeing here, you know, 3 years later, almost, well, 3.5 years later, it's still going on. And that to me is a gift and a miracle. So I hope that that helps all of you. Never shared those before, so that was an interesting experience. What I looked up, what I'm supposed to be saying, it said, what I used to be like what happened and what I'm like now. So what I used to be like was distant. My earliest memory is in diapers and with somebody stealing my childhood, and he had an addiction of his own. And I remember escaping. I remember my mind went somewhere else, and it was a peaceful place. It wasn't the craziness of the world as we know it. It was calm, it was quiet, it was peaceful. And I loved that feeling of getting away from it all, you know? And it wasn't very long before I discovered that I could do that with food too. You know, the big book talks about, in the doctor's opinion, XXVIII. It says men and women, Sharon, ate because she loved the effect produced by her eating. The sensation was so elusive that while I admit it is injurious, I cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. And that is where my life was. I went from one addiction to another addiction to another, and I could switch because it was easy to be who I wanted to be with this person and that person, and this person I could eat with, and that person I could smoke with, and that person I could do this with. And it made it easy for me to avoid the reality inside my head. I hear and I see so many ways. When I hear Bill's story and I see him, and I know there was an interview with Bill W. where he was talking about when he was younger, and his grandpa had a good way of challenging him. And he said, you know, in gosh, what is it? Anyways, on the other side of the world, they can make a boomerang there, but they can't make them here. They can't make them that'll come back. And Bill W, as a young man, he figured he'd do that. And he started carving boomerangs. And he finally did it. And he showed his grandpa and he threw that thing out there and it almost hit his grandpa in the head. Grandpa gets back home and realized that young Bill carved his boomerang out of his headboard. You can imagine raising somebody like that. Well, I can relate to Bill W because everything I did was always to try to show you that I was better than, because I didn't want you to know that I felt less than. I spent a lifetime shoveling food in my face. I mean, God, I remember I wrote down a few notes, but it's more distracting than helpful. When I was seven, in our faith, you have a certain ritual that they do where you stick out your tongue and they put something on it and then you say amen. And I told my mom and dad, my mom, that I needed to go practice that. So could I please have that big family size bag of chips, and I'd just use a few of them and I'd bring it right back. 7 years old, and I'm just going to practice for a little bit, and that whole bag of chips disappeared. Well, this kept happening over and over. I tried being in the Brownies and the Girl Scouts, and you know, I'm supposed to be selling cookies, but instead, I would say, you know, I sold this many boxes, so that means I can eat a box. And what happened is the boxes disappeared and the money didn't come in. And I had to lie about that. I would steal money from my parents to buy candy so that I would feel better about myself, so I could share it with others, because I didn't have a way to connect with other people without having something to show you that I was either as good as or better than you. You know, and when it says what I was like, I was disconnected. I didn't have a way to connect with humans. I could connect with animals. I grew up on a farm and I felt more comfortable with animals. But as far as connecting with humans, my best friend and I, We grew up just down the street from each other, and we were at each other's house all the time. And it wasn't until we were in our 30s that we found out that we were both being abused in ways we never shared with each other. Because the truth is, I never shared certain parts of myself with other people. I didn't get vulnerable like that. I didn't allow myself to do that. I wasn't going to allow myself to feel that. Well, what happened was, I started to realize that if I kept eating like I was eating, I wouldn't look the way I wanted to look because I also wanted to look a certain way. So I found other ways of controlling it. I found exercise. I found certain drugs I could do that would help with that. I found that if I drank, then I didn't eat as much. If I smoked, I wouldn't eat as much. If I did this, I wouldn't eat as much. And I found diets and I went through all those over and over again. And then right around, let me see, I was in my, it was right around 99. I'd gotten to the point where there was something seriously wrong and I didn't know what it was. I got on disability. I couldn't handle my life. I was in horrendous pain all the time. I didn't realize that part of what was causing my pain was my past. And part of what was causing my pain was what I was putting in my body in the present because I couldn't stop eating. I wouldn't let people know what I was eating. Nobody realized what was going on. Fortunately, around 2003, I bottomed out. I was at the point where every night when I went to bed, I would pray that I would be dead in the morning. I didn't want to wake up. I was so mad at God that He made me wake up in the morning. I used everything I could at night to sedate myself. I passed out. When I woke up, I was so mad. And I realized that I had to do something. At that point in time, I was bottoming out in another addiction. And they put, you know, I got put in a treatment for a couple of days. I came out. I read the things on the wall, you know, I watched the two video, the first three videos about the first three steps. So I figured I was good there. I was ready for my parents to make amends to me, and then I could go help people, you know. That's it. I was good. I was off and running. I was gonna go help people because now that I had realized what the problem was, I could. Well, I'm very fortunate that I've had good sponsors and I had good sponsors in that program, and they did the best that they could with the knowledge that they had. And so they got me to a certain point, and every time I turn around, I would find another addiction. And what's odd for me is it seems like the layers that went on, you know, my food was my one of my first ways to escape. Eating was the thing. And then after that, there was another thing. And then there was another thing. Well, though, as those pieces started to come off, I got bigger and bigger and bigger. I was not that big when I first got into that other program. But what happened was I still had all those feelings. And so in 2009, I got to that point where I was like, okay, you know, I've quit this and this, and I have some friends who are in OA. Because, you know, there's a lot of us that are in more than one program. So I talked to one of them and she said, well, this is the food plan I'm following in OA. And she sent it to me. I'm like, that is really drastic. There's no way I can do that. So I called another one because she had another plan and she sent it to me. And I went, no, I don't think I can do that. And then I heard about a group that sponsors that works out of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, I love the Big Book. I love it from my other program. It is the basis of everything that made my life bearable. But what I was finding was I was back to page 52. I was stuck in those, you know, oh God. I love this description. I was having trouble with personal relationships, even sober. I couldn't control my emotional nature. I was a prey to misery and depression. I couldn't make a living. I had a feeling of uselessness. I was full of fear. I was unhappy. And I found that I was getting to the point where I couldn't even be of real help to people. I couldn't even show up for my sponsees in the other program because I would binge beforehand because I was nervous or whatever I was feeling. And then I just didn't have the ability to show up. So I made a call in 2009 to a lady, and she told me about what we do in OA. And she told me about it, and I went, oh, that's really nice. That's great. I'm going to go try a few things because she told me about certain substances. She goes, you know, we get off the sugar, you know, and we make sure that there isn't sugar in this position and there isn't flour. And so I said, I can do that. I already have a program. I can do that. So off I went to figure that out. And I started buying these fresh fruits, and I would get this huge watermelon, and I would sit down and watch TV, and I would cut that huge watermelon, and somehow that huge watermelon ended up fitting in a quart bag because as I was cutting, I was eating everything in sight. And I tried it with cantaloupe, and I tried, I'm going to get a job where I am really active. So I had done it before. I'm going to go clean. You know, I don't need that OA stuff. You know, I already got a program. I'm good. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go here. And if I eat a meal before I go to work, then I should be able to work through this shift and clean these three banks. And I will have the exercise that'll take it off. Always worked before in the past, right? So I did that. And what started to happen was that I found that I could not make it through the shift without eating. So I would pack healthy things to eat, even though I shouldn't need to eat during that time. And what I started to see was it looked exactly like my other addiction. I was completely powerless over it once I put the first one in my body, you know, and I could get through if I suffered through all three banks. I had to stop and get something on the way home. I just could not make it. So I called that woman back. And you know how it talks about the leveling of our pride. And she took me on as a sponsor. And she actually ended up passing me on to one of my sponsee sisters. And she started me working through the big book. And what happened was, I found a way of living that actually worked for me. When we did those steps, when I started to realize that when I put things in my body, certain things in my body, I can't stop. It was just like with anything else of my addiction. If I started by taking the first one, I couldn't stop. And so she helped me to walk through the steps so that I wouldn't have to do that. And I got a new level of freedom, okay, that I didn't know was possible. When we were doing our four, my fourth, my fifth step, you know how you have people that you resent. And I had these resentments against these people who did things to me when I was a child. And they were on my never list for my eighth step. But my sponsor taught me that I still need to pray for them and I still need to make amends to them because not because of anything they did, because what they did was horrible and there's no reason to ever do that, but because I held on to that resentment for all those years and spent all that time resenting people. And what happened was, I was able to go to that person and make amends for my part in that I held things against him. And then the weirdest thing happened. About a week later, I saw him again, and he was standing right there at the entrance of the YMCA, and he was happy. And I looked and I went, oh, wow, look, my uncle's happy. I didn't ever think he'd be happy again after he lost my aunt. And I was happy to see him happy. It was such freedom to be able to do that. But what happened was, Unfortunately, with that group, I didn't have any kind of an actual food plan, so I couldn't define my abstinence. And at a certain point, my sponsor relapsed, and I couldn't sponsor because I didn't know how to define abstinence. So I got desperate, and I found this lady who would tell me what I was supposed to do and eat, and I started to do that. But of the two sponsors that sponsored me like that, I didn't have the willingness to go to the next step. I honestly didn't think it would be possible for me to ever report my food. When I was there was some childhood issues that telling people what I ate just wouldn't happen. And I told her that, and it was not going to ever happen. And so she let me go, which she needed to do, because my food was slowly slipping away again. Things were slipping in. And what I find and have found is that it's not always the big bang that I go out with. Sometimes it's slowly ebbing away at those little things. This just has a little bit of that. Oh, this isn't anything near as bad what you used to have. These are natural ingredients. This will be okay. You know, this is an amount that would be okay. You did this extra stuff. You should be able to do that. And slowly my abstinence ebbed away. And there came a time in 2020 when she let me go, and we were in Florida. It was COVID. I had to go drive out to get my allergy shot. And I knew that when I left the house that I was going to binge before I got back home.
That's
I
10
knew
minutes
it. Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. So, wow, that went quick. So I got desperate, and I got on a big book meeting, and I put my number out as a newcomer, and I got those calls, and I got a sponsor. And this sponsor helped me to see that part of what was happening with me is I had never identified my alcoholic foods. You know, what is alcohol for me? You know, certain foods, certain behaviors, you know, they are like if I was an alcoholic drinking alcohol. And then I had to get off of all those things, and I was really surprised because some of them didn't make sense. You know, like the sweeteners. What the heck is wrong with that? You know, but for it was something that happened with me. And what happened was I found out how bad my disease was, because when I stopped having those things, I would do anything to have them again. You know, when they talk about how it just said how, you know, we lose touch with reality. We no longer differentiate the true from the false. The truth was, if I didn't eat those, I could get better, but I couldn't differentiate the truth from the false. And so therefore, I absolutely had to have those things. But the gift of that was by not having them, I found out how bad my disease was. I found my powerlessness. I found my absolute inability to stop and to stay stopped. So I worked through the steps with that sponsor, and she told me if I just hang in there that it would get better. And I did the steps. And what happened was it brought me to this place that I call neutrality. And now, what's happened is my husband likes a lot of my favorite binge foods. And they're in the house, and we're in a motor home. You can't hide them, you know? So I will come across those things, or I see those things. And now what my definition of neutrality is that those foods don't call me anymore. They actually look like cat food. I have a cat, and I never in my life have thought, you know, I wonder, that food that I got her smells kind of good. I think I should try it. Never in my life have I thought I should eat the cat food. And that's what they look like to me. I pick them up at the store for him. That's me. Just like in the book it says about some alcoholics keep alcohol in their house and some don't. That's a personal thing that the family decides. And in our family, this is what he has. And it isn't a problem anymore. The steps made it possible for me to have back those things that I lost. When I read about who I was on page 52, the opposite of that is the promises that we read all the time. Is that 84, 85, where I have a new freedom and a new happiness, and I get to be present with people. I've gotten to be able to connect with people. I have honest, loving relationships with my son, with my family. I was able to be there for my brother before he passed, with for my sister before she passed. I was able to be there for my other brother when his wife passed. I'm able to be with people. I'm able to be vulnerable. I'm able to be myself. And what's happened is I went from, like the book talks about, that level of living to a point where it is ever more wonderful. I love how I live now. I love being able to be free and to be able to go where I'm going to go, to not have to worry about if I go to my closet, if something's going to fit. My jeans that I wore yesterday fit me 3 years ago. Who'd have thunk? I didn't know they lasted that long. I don't have to worry about whether I'm gonna go back to eating or any of the things that went with it. I don't know what else I missed. I know I had a few minutes left. I think you have a question section afterwards. So I know there's a lot more that I wanted to say, and I didn't reference as much as I wanted to for the book. I hope you'll forgive me. This is my first OA open talk, but I'm very grateful to get to be here. I was thinking about Bill's story, where he says he talks about self-knowledge. So just so you know, I'm a person who really thought self-knowledge would fix it. I knew a lot, and I had been in the program for quite a while, and I knew I could apply this stuff, but my self-knowledge couldn't fix this. I had to connect with another compulsive eater. I had to be able to identify what my alcohol was. It was a lot harder to do that with this program than it was with my other one. So having somebody that knows what that looks like and that doesn't co-sign my BS, is a godsend, is a gift. I continue to stay in touch with my sponsor. I have two of my sponsors here tonight, my current sponsor and my big book sponsor who walked me through and helped me find abstinence. And I stay in touch with my sponsors. I work with others. And I've had a lot of times where I had to start over, and I never thought that I would get it. But the truth is, there are promises in these books, in this book. And if I do what it says, I'll get what they got. And that is what I would have to end on. If I just do what they said, I will get what they got. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks, family.
Thank you, Sharon, so much for sharing your experience, strength, and hope with us. Now it is time for people to make a comment or ask a question.